Good morning, everyone.
Let's take our seats and leave the meeting.
Well, it's my pleasure to introduce to you Sunil Mani, who is a Sunday school teacher at the Chinmaya Mission in Dallas. He's a 1993 graduate of Leadership Dallas. It's great to have him with us. He's the secretary and program chair of the Greater Dallas Commerce, been married 25 years, and the proud father of one son and one daughter. It's terrific having you with us. He's going to lead the invocation this morning. If you please rise. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My dear brothers and sisters assembled here, it is gratifying to see your interest in prayers and the faith you follow, and the interest in the faiths of all residents of the great city of Dallas and North Texas area. It is my privilege to share with you the traditional Hindu invocation read at the beginning of all gatherings. Swasti prajabhya paripalyantam nyayen margen mahim mahishah go brahmane bhayat submastu nityam lokaha samastha sukhinau bhavantu. And the meaning is like this: O Lord, may prosperity be glorified. May administrators rule the world with law and justice. May divinity, knowledge and erudition be protected. May all beings be happy and prosperous. Sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhag bhavet. O Lord, may all be happy, may all be healthy, may all perceive auspiciousness, may no one ever be in misery and distressed. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om peace, peace, peace. O Lord, thanks for all the soldiers sitting beside us here today and for all those serving towards our countries and our freedoms for all of us. Thank you for this opportunity today. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you being with us. Frank Rosello, who heads up the Hispanic Chambers in the audience, would you lead us in the chamber in the Pledge of Allegiance? Frank, can I ask you and CC to come up for just a moment?
Well, good morning, everyone, and good morning to the City Council. It is, I am joined by Cece Rojas, President and CEO of the Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and I am Frank Rosello. I am the Chairman of the Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and it is truly our pleasure to be with you this morning to present the City of Dallas with the most prestigious award that the Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber awards. It's called the Unidos Award. And let me give you a little bit of background about what the Unidos Award is. The Unidos Award is presented to two Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce partners, one in the corporate sector and one in the public sector, that have distinguished themselves among our group of partner investors for the contributions to the Chamber and the Hispanic community over the year. The City of Dallas has proven to be a great strategic partner for the Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and we truly value our partnership. I would like to take this time to recognize our outstanding Dallas City Council for the work that they do. You truly understand how important it is to have goals for disadvantaged business enterprises, because a strong minority business community makes for a strong Dallas. I will also like to recognize Mr. Ede Williams and his team, especially Perfecta Gallegos and Rosalind Dickerson, who are terrific team players to work with. The strategic alliance between the Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and the City of Dallas through the Community Outreach Liaison Program and the Business Assistance Centers has allowed the Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce to provide assistance to countless existing and aspiring entrepreneurs. A wide array of programs and services are offered to support the advancement, education, and the growth of Hispanic businesses within our Hispanic business community and to take our entrepreneurs to the next level. The Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce provides business training, access to procurement opportunities, assistance with minority certification, and an incubator program in addition to other helpful programs and services. We have witnessed firsthand the great impact that these programs have in our community. If it were not for the resources and outreach provided by this partnership, the Dallas community may not be as vibrant as it is today. The success of this partnership speaks directly to the council and the city manager's commitment to making funding available to provide CULP and the BAC programming. Thank you for all that you do. Unidos, or together, we can take the Dallas business community to new heights. And in the spirit of this award, and on behalf of our over 2,200 members of the Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, it is our honor to present the Unidos Award to Honorable Mayor Tom Leppard and City Manager Mary Shum. Thank you very much.
Well, speaking on behalf of Mary and the entire City Council, we just want to thank you very much. You've been involved in so many different efforts across the city, clearly trying to build businesses in the Hispanic community, but all through the city, and we just appreciate that very much. It's terrific. We appreciate the honor, but more than that, we're just thankful to have you and your organization as part of this community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman. We have in our audience today a great group of men and women. They are men and women that everybody in this room, everybody throughout this region, everybody in this country are not only grateful for their service, but we are proud of what they do. They are the men and women of the United States Army, and it is a pleasure to have them with us today. Could I call up? Absolutely. Can I call up Lieutenant Ronnie Williamson and all of the men and women of the Army? Great having you with us. Appreciate it. I'd like to go down and we'll introduce each of the men and women. I'm going to turn it over to you and we're going to do a proclamation. Does that sound okay? Terrific. Your name?
Carter Fox.
Terrific. Where are you that day, Carter?
I'm based in Fort Hood and now I'm in Pleasant Grove.
Terrific. Great. Great to have you from Dallas. This is me.
It's our first class, Jones. Originally from Dallas, Texas here.
Where are you based?
Fort Bragg, North Carolina, Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Terrific. Thank you very much.
Staff Sergeant Latanya Fletcher. I've been to Egypt, Germany, Virginia, Kentucky, and now here in Dallas, Texas.
I'm glad to have you here. Thank you very much.
Staff Sergeant Kyle Matus. I've been in Bamberg, Germany, Iraq twice, Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and now here in Dallas.
Terrific. Thanks for the service. Staff Sergeant Dodds, 3rd Infantry Division, Fort Stewart, Georgia, and now recruiting team.
Terrific.
Good. Lafon Perez. I'm a citizen of Fort Hood, Texas. I'm Schofield Barracks, Hawaii. And now in Oak Cliff, recruiting station.
Terrific.
Sergeant Matthew Ritchie, Oklahoma, Germany, and Dallas.
Terrific. Glad the last one.
Sergeant Escavel, I've been in Germany, Italy, Fort Benning, Fort Jackson, and everywhere in between.
Terrific. Thanks, Sergeant. Well, as I said, we're just proud of all of your service in so many different areas. I think all of us understand that we are very fortunate to have the freedoms and the liberties that we do. We also understand that it comes at a cost. And we just appreciate not only what each one of you are doing, but symbolic of everything the United States Army has done for over two centuries now. As you can imagine, and if we could bring the cake out now, this is the birthday of the U.S. Army. Now, usually on a birthday, we would have Sheffy sing happy birthday. We'll pass on that one today, but nevertheless, it is a distinct happy birthday. Could I have all of the council come up here, and we're going to get some pictures with these great men and women. Colonel, if you'd come up here. Come on up here. Here we go. Colonel, and again, Colonel heads up the recruiting here in this area of the world, and we appreciate what you're doing there. I want to read this proclamation. Again, it is an honor to have you with us. The proclamation reads, whereas the United States Army was established by the First Continental Congress on the 14th of June, 1775. What was your rank back then? Whereas the United States Army exists as the strength of our nation to defend the freedom of our citizens and our nation's security interests, and whereas many present and former citizens of Dallas that we've seen here today have served our nation and sacrificed in defense of our freedoms as soldiers in the United States Army, and whereas it is proper to recognize the United States Army annually on its birthday and to thank those who have served and those who are presently serving, now, therefore, I, Tom Leppard, as mayor of the city of Dallas, and on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim June 14, 2008 as United States Army Day, and we would exhort all citizens of Dallas to join with us in saluting as we express our gratitude to protect our nation and our freedoms. Colonel, it is an honor to have you here, not only today, but every single day. Thanks for what you and your colleagues are doing.
Mr. Mayor, council members, and the audience, first off, on behalf of Dallas Recruiting Battalion and United States Army, and these proud soldiers standing up here with us, just like to say thanks for making this day special, as well as proclaiming June 14th Army Day in the city of Dallas. For over 233 years, you know, the U.S. Army has kept the America strong and safe and allowed us to enjoy the freedoms that we all enjoy today. And these fine soldiers standing here through their tireless efforts, as well as a strong community relationship with the city of Dallas, will ensure that their trend continues through recruiting with integrity the finest young men and women to keep our army strong. So, once again, thank you for making this day special for us and the city of Dallas.
Well, it wouldn't be a proper birthday unless we had a birthday cake. So we've got, as appropriate, a large birthday cake to signify the day and to commemorate the U.S. Army. Should we go ahead and cut it? That's the deal. You were in the Army? You were in the 1st Battalion? That 1775 one?
Mayor, thank you. Colonel, I want to thank you. As far as I know, I'm the only Army person on the City Council. I was in the United States Army. I did very well. I went in as a private, and I came out as a private. I really did very, very well. But I really want to thank you. Everything that y'all have done, I mean, really, it's unbelievable. And I mean it. It's just great. Thank you for protecting us. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Appreciate it. Okay, should we do it? Okay, here we go. Okay, let's all get around here. Okay, here we go. Albert, get your hand in here. We need a steady hand. You ready? Here we go. I'm going to say, that is a knife. And that is a knife. You sure can.
Sir, a small token of our appreciation, the council members, CAPS, and U.S. Army PMs, as well for you. We have a U.S. Army binder and one of the battalion coins. On one side, it has our battalion logo, and on the back, it has the rank of myself and my battalion sergeant major.
It's my pleasure to invite up Mr. Rozanski. Mr. Rozanski?
Thank you, Mayor. This is really a privilege for me today, colleagues and everyone in this room. I want to special recognition. Unfortunately, the husband and wife are not with us today. They have departed this wonderful world. But their son is here, and his name is Forrest Nolte. Forrest, would you please step up to the table? I would like to read a special recognition from the mayor of the city of Dallas to your parents. Whereas Benjamin Terrell was born in 1917 in New York City, graduating with honors from Columbia School of Business, and whereas Selma Lee Pearl was born in Chicago in 1927, where she studied at the Art Institute of Chicago and later attended the University of Wisconsin prior to moving to Dallas, and whereas Selma Pearl was an avid reader, served as treasurer of the Friends of the Dallas Public Library, and was a touring volunteer for the Dallas Museum of Art and the Nasher Sculpture Garden. And whereas Benjamin Pearl, a gifted organizer and manager, held positions as president of Texas Miller Products in Corsicana, president of Adam Hass, Inc. in Dallas, CEO and chairman of Miller Brothers Industries in Dallas and New York, and president of the Hack Institute of America. And whereas the Pearls were longtime supporters of numerous Dallas organizations and charities, including the Dallas Symphony Association, the Dallas Museum of Art, the Nasher Sculpture Garden and the Dallas Opera, and Southwestern Medical Foundation, and the Jewish Federation of Greater Dallas, and the American Jewish Committee. And whereas Benjamin and Selma are defined by their wonderful, happy personalities and smile, truly never meeting a stranger, and that is true, and always being kind, compassionate, understanding to others. And now, therefore, I, Tom Leppard, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the City of Dallas Council, do hereby extend special recognition to Benjamin and Selma Pearl. Signed, Tom Leppard. Thank you so much. This is a real honor for me. Parents were absolutely wonderful, and I want to personally thank them for the contribution they made, a large contribution to our Dallas Public Library. I thank you so, so much. Thank you. Thank you.
Mayor Leppard and Councilman Brzezanski and council members, I just want to say how proud my parents were to be a member of this community for many, many years, and they have watched it and participated in its development and growth in so many wonderful and positive ways in the last decade. They would have been honored by this recognition, and on behalf of my family, I am honored to be here today to receive this award. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mitchell. Now I'd like to introduce and invite up Patricia Maea, who is the Major Gifts Director for the American Heart Association. Patricia, thank you. This is CPR and AED Awareness Week, and that is known as cardiopulmonary resuscitation, but we know it better as CPR. And it is a process that we're going to spend a little bit of time on later this morning, so I hope you'll be around for that, and hopefully we'll all pass it. Dr. Pepe says that he guarantees that, so I think it's the quality of the instruction, not the students, that's going to carry us through on that. But we just want to thank you for being here, for what the American Heart Association does, involved in so many different things in the community. We were out at the Heart Walk and so many other events that have been terrific, bring the community together, but more than that, bring awareness to all of the challenges that we have in heart disease and the killer that it is. It was interesting to note to me as I got involved in this that actually there's more women killed by heart disease than there are men, and I don't think we always appreciate that. So we appreciate the work that you do. Now, CPR has saved, needless to say, countless individuals in this community as well as across the nation and the world. And we want to recognize that today. Patricia, we want to give you this proclamation. It says, whereas 50 years ago, CPR, known most commonly as cardiopulmonary resuscitation, was developed to save lives for persons whose hearts have stopped beating or for persons who have stopped breathing. And whereas CPR has now helped to save hundreds of thousands of lives worldwide, and whereas the automated external defibrillators, most commonly known as AEDs, have now become part of standard CPR training and have been shown to have a dramatic life-saving potential, even in the hands of non-medical rescuers. And whereas the week of June 1 to 7 now has been designated by the Congress of the United States of America as National CPR and AED Awareness Week, and whereas the goal of the first National CPR and AED Awareness Week is to encourage states, cities, and towns to establish organized programs that provide CPR and AED training and increase public access to AEDs, and whereas the City of Dallas is already committed to training all of its employees in CPR and AED, used as an example to other employers, schools, and businesses, and communities nationwide, whereas the Mayor and City Council wish to clearly establish Dallas as one of the safest cities in the nation for medical emergencies and to make all Dallas citizens part of the world's greatest rescue team, now therefore I, Tom Leppard, Mayor of the City of Dallas, on behalf of the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby proclaim June 1 through 7 as CPR and AED Awareness Week. Thank you very much, Patricia.
Thank you. Thank you. On behalf of the American Heart Association, it is truly my honor to accept this. with our own national headquarters based here in Dallas. It is not only a nice privilege to have you as partners, but you know, we certainly value your relationship. Not only that, but we certainly commend you for leading by example. Your HeartSafe community program, where you're training all of the city personnel on bystander CPR and AED and how to use that, will certainly help make an impact, and I think together we will help make Dallas a better community. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And I also want to introduce Dr. Pepe. I would give his titles, but the reality is we'd be here all afternoon. I don't think that there is a medical organization in this entire region that one way or another he is not associated with. He also heads up all of our EMS work here in the city of Dallas. He'll be with us a little bit later when we do the CPR. But, Dr. Pepe, thank you very much. I know you wanted to say a couple of words in regard to this. Doctor?
Yeah, mostly I wanted to thank the American Heart Association for partnering with us. 2 years ago, Mary Soom and the Vice President from the National Center got together and said, let's make a commitment to make Dallas one of the safest places in the nation for medical emergencies, and it's come to fruition. Through their help, we were able to secure funds to make sure that every person was trained in this organization, and that'll be a clear example for this community. So I wanted to thank them, and I should say, on a final note, is that the example here has already shown up in USA Today. USA Today to talk about what we're doing here and what an impact it's going to make in the nation. So thank you very much. If that's the question, the answer is, as you know, we have previously done training for the previous mayors and councils, and we had already a life-saving effect within two of our council members, which we'll mention later. Council member Medrano and Coop have already saved a life after they got the training last year. We have a whole new mayor and a set of new council members. We want to make sure they're up to date, and we're going to do the training later this morning. Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. All right. And I just wanted to do a quick progress report. We have about 6,000 employees to train because our firefighters and our police officers are already trained, and so we're beginning all the rest of us. And we've got about 2,500 folks trained, and we'll be working toward finishing up the end of the year with the entire 6,000.
Terrific job. Thank you, Mary. Okay.
And again, Doctor, thank you very much. We'll see you in just a couple minutes, I know. Okay. With that, Madam Secretary, could I turn to you for our open microphone speakers?
Good morning. Your morning speakers begin with Margaret Lindsay, followed by Lindsay Mangum. I'm going to first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the sergeant at arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. You do have 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both screens. At 30 seconds, the numbers will turn amber. That's when the numbers turn to zero and red, please allow the next speaker to come up to the podium. Please state your name for the record.
Margaret Lindsay. I live at 6109 North Jim Miller Road. Good morning. Last week, you were shown a dramatic presentation of the bleak life of a shelter dog. The images were horrific. Truly, life for a shelter dog is sad and often tragic. I am as disturbed by those images as you are. Then the speaker went on to characterize people who have been coming to see council members as those breeders that she likes to call the litterers. She claimed that we're the ones causing all the dog problems in Dallas. Well, I don't know Ms. Oki or Ms. Couch, and clearly they don't know me or the people who've been trying to see you. Not one of us is a professional breeder. Their strategy is clear. Convince you that the people causing the dog problems are us, and you probably won't want to talk to us. But we're pet owners, dog trainers, dog competition people who are concerned because we feel sure the ordinances won't work. After speaking with us recently, Skip Trimble said that we're clearly responsible pet owners. We are as disturbed as you are by high euthanasia rates. Believe me, if I thought these ordinances would solve our dog problems, I would support them. And I want to thank those five council people or so who have opened their door to us and to code compliance, to Ms. Turner, Ms. Moore, and others who have been willing to talk to us. You have looked at cities, we've looked at cities where similar ordinances have been passed and they have failed to produce the results you're seeking. Cities like Los Angeles, California, and closer to home, Fort Worth, Texas, where voluntary compliance rates with city registration plummeted after the ordinances were passed. We've researched the cities, and you have a piece of paper showing some of that in front of you, that have programs that do work, like Charlottesville, Virginia, with a successful save rate of 90%, or Tompkins County, New York, with a save rate of 92% in their no-kill shelters. In Santa Barbara, California, recently, they sent their ordinances back to the drawing board. As City Supervisor Joseph Centino said, "I would like to concentrate on the people who are causing this problem, and let's not be punitive to the great law-abiding people." One of our concerns is this. If it has been so hard to enforce the current ordinances, how will it be possible to enforce new ones that require much more in time, personnel, and money to implement? Just passing an ordinance won't solve a problem if it fails to encourage voluntary compliance and enforcement hasn't been addressed once again. Please stop passing new ordinances and focus instead on why the current ones haven't worked. And please give us a chance to visit with you. You need both sides of this issue before you and presented to you before you vote. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. And I'm looking forward to getting together with you, too. Madam Speaker.
Your next speaker is Lindsay Mangum, followed by Anne-Marie Bristow.
Thanks again for being with us.
Ms. Mangum. Thank you.
Hello, I'm I live in South Dallas, and I see things over there in my neighborhood. Drug traffic. I see mothers that have children, and they bring in CPS dudes and taking the children. And I think it's a sad thing to see our neighborhood going like that. And I feel that it's something that the city of Dallas can do to help the mothers and the fathers to better themselves to make it work. They can keep their children and take care of their children and raise their children themselves than to send them somewhere where they'll never see their parents again. That hurts me to see that a child being raised up with someone that they don't know at all. I wouldn't want to be raised that way. And I was raised by my mother and father 60 years together, you know. And I see these children now, it's just terrible. It hurts me to see it. So, but I also see where the drugs have added the problem in the neighborhood, the world. I believe that the drugs can be cleaned up. And I've always learned, my mother told me, she said, clean the streets up first. Get out there and get your broom and start sweeping. And I get on the curb and I switch my ground. So I'm helping try to get this here, my neighborhood together. I live there and I see everything over there. I would like for the city to see what I see sometimes and try to help us get our neighborhood better. I appreciate the time that I've had. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you so much, Mayor Lefkowitz. First of all, I want to thank my constituents for coming down. And when I was walking the beat for my campaign, we talked for a long period of time about a number of issues in the community. Can I have Chief Paul Hill to come up, please? Chief, can you just give me an update on some of the things that we're going to try to do in that area? Mr. Mike Murphy, who also lives on Wendelton, had called me. Someone had stole his fence while he was at work. They had stole some stuff off of one of his cars that was sitting in his driveway. Of course, he's going to have to deal with the issue of getting it removed from his property because now it's considered scrap metal. And some of the, there was a senior who lived down the street in the same area. Her fence and some of her things were stolen also. This is a huge problem in the South Dallas Fair Park area. Of course, drugs are everywhere. And so that's an issue that we're going to have to continue to work with on how do we deal with crack houses, boarded up houses. And I think we're going in the right direction on trying to deal with some of those problems. But of course, it is not the end solution. So just kind of give me an update on what you see. And you and I, we will be also getting together in the near future on looking at some issues, because it just not, it just doesn't stop on Wendell. So we got guys hanging out by the Forest Avenue Bridge. We got still some hanging in front of Little World, the store on Tanner. So we got to deal with these issues. So just kind of give me an update.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning. First of all, Ms. Davis, I spoke with Mr. Mangum, and we are actually in that neighborhood right now. We've been there for the last couple of weeks doing some what we refer to as meet and greets. And the first thing that we wanted to do was we wanted to go into the neighborhood. We went door to door. We knocked on the doors. We asked the residents specifically what their concerns were in that area. I'm really happy to report as a result of that, we got some information regarding a potential drug house that we are working on with narcotics in that area. So, and I think he's actually seen us out in the area doing our foot patrols out there. So we're going to continue to do that. There was a resident that had a chain-linked gate taken, and of course we are pretty sure that that went to one of the scrap metal yards. As I stated, in addition to the foot patrols, just actually walking the neighborhood, because what we want is we want the community to be able to call us and let us know what's going on when they see something. And that's kind of a bridge that hasn't been, a gap that hasn't really been bridged yet, and we're working diligently on that. We're starting to see the phone calls coming in to us, giving us information about potential problems in the area.
Well, you know, as we, and I had talked to Mayor Leppard, we'll be having our retreat coming up fairly soon, and I think, once again, it's another, I mean, we just have to work through this process. It's an issue that's going on throughout the district. I will continue to be a part of trying to resolve issues like this in my district. So I just want to just say, you know, we're working on it. Just give us some time. We will try to come up with some type of solution to deal with the problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kilworthy.
Thank you, Mayor. Let me just say to Mr. Lindsay, I feel your pain with the drug houses. That's, now, this is Ms. Davis's district, but we have this problem all over our community. I would like to just assure you that I will be following and assisting Ms. Davis with whatever it is that she needs to do to help eradicate the problem in her area as we continue to work together to try to move it all across the city wherever they are. Now, the crack house is just one thing, but that is not the only problem in the neighborhood. Yes, that's where the crack is being sold, is from the drug house. But it is those people that are hanging out, just as Ms. Davis indicated, that's over by the freeway and just straggling throughout the neighborhood. So with that, Chief, I would say let's try to put together, and I'm sure that Mayor Pro Tem Garcia is going to make sure that we begin to address some type of a strategy in public safety. And it could be that we need to escalate this, Mayor, to back down to legislation. The problem is just not the crack house. The problem are these guys hanging out. They're not selling the crack where they're hanging out. They just are hanging out. And we don't have the lottering law. And we have to figure out a way, Ms. Davis, how we can work collaboratively together
to figure out what we can do about people just hanging out and just strolling through the neighborhood. Yes, let's get rid of the crack house. But, I mean, these guys just hanging in front of the stores, and not just in your, I mean, they're hanging out in front of stores all over. And we got to figure out how we can bust that up and put them somewhere. We got to do some type of legislation. So
appreciate
I'm there to help you, Mr. Davis.
Thank you. Mr. Rozanski, please.
Thank you. Again, very quickly, I want to thank Councilwoman Davis for all the work that she has done in her neighborhood and for her initiative and everything. And I know you're working to do everything. And I want to thank you for all the hard work you're doing. Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Madam Secretary?
Your next speaker is Anne-Marie Bristow, followed by Ernest Barnett Manning.
Hello, I'm Anne-Marie Bristow, and I'm speaking about dogs, and I didn't know there was anything else going on about dogs. I'm not part of that. About 3 weeks ago, I checked the land around the office to see if everything was okay, and I came upon a beautiful fawn-colored female pit bull. She was dead, on her back, chewed up, and had her front paws chained. That was terrible. It was just one mistreated animal too many. I'm sorry. I work many nights, and on the way home, I drive from Morrell, Corinth, to East to Colorado. And there are so many starving, mangy, disposable dogs there. They scrounge in the night. They look for food. And it is shameful. It's truly shameful for us to have that. It is. I'm so sorry, but it upset me so bad, that dog. And the city council passed a law, but didn't address education. You all need to educate the people. You have to have a program. You got to change habits, a mindset of dog owners. They got to be changed. A massive campaign should be implemented using radio stations, television stations, billboards, churches, camps, and raise people's level of decency. If we cannot reach the parents, we need to educate the children. They are the next dog owners. Years ago, it was okay to beat the wife and the children, but we frown upon it now, and we changed that. So let's change the other thing, too. There's a very nice television program. It's called The Dog Whisperer, and it has three requirements for dog ownership. One, and that's in order of priority, exercise your dog. That means walking. It's not chaining, not a backyard. We are 10 years in that neighborhood, and we're the only people walking the dogs every day. People know us. Not a dog is walked. The only time you ever see him is to taking a male pit bull to a female who is in heat, in chains, and that's it. That is the amount of exercise those dogs get. You see, dogs changing daily. They have just a new pit bull, a new dog, because the old one is gone. And second is discipline. That means training, socializing, and stopping bad dog behavior. Train and socialize your dog. Three, love. That's the affection you give to a companion. The dogs that see in the neighborhood and in the dark have never known any of it. Let us change that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Dr. Garcia.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Bristow, and thank you to all the people who have come to in front of this council and speak on behalf of animals in this city for a long time. The reality is we haven't had pretty much any regulation when it comes to animal control, but this council is working in changing some of those rules, and again, I have met with several of the people in the group. I appreciate your help. We continue to work in some kind of ordinance regulation that will really benefit everyone that is an animal pet owner in the city of Dallas. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much, Madam Secretary. Mr. Rozanski, please.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Mr. Evans. Good morning, Ryan. I did not see Mary in here. It's only what I read in the paper. You know, unfortunately, a tragedy happened at our animal shelter. And, you know, it's very difficult when there's 26,000 animals that we unfortunately have to put to sleep. One slipped by us. Only what I read in the paper, what happened the other day. like that from happening again. Chief Brown, I'm so sorry. I called Ryan, and I thought it would be under you, Ryan, and I'm sorry. It's really under Chief Brown. So whatever we can do to try, try and stop, a pet like this, some people's like a child. So whatever we can do to stop an accident like that from happening.
Mr. Zansky, I totally agree. I think the incident you're referring to occurred in Denton.
Yeah, I thought it was in Dallas.
No, that was in Denton County.
Okay,
it was not Dallas.
Did we learn? I'm sorry, I thought it was in Dallas.
Yeah, but we're continuing to learn a lot about animal control issues.
I'm sorry, I said Dallas. But Lenny, did we learn something from that we can get over to our animal shelter to make sure that doesn't happen in Dallas?
Our folks will definitely transfer that knowledge.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Your next speaker is Ernest Barnett Manning, followed by John Radovic. Ernest Manning.
Yes, my name is Ernest Barnett Manning. I'm out of District 9, and I do a lot of business, me and my family members, and we deal with a lot of citizens here in Dallas, the city of Dallas. I'm here to speak on some situations that's been going on in the city of Dallas for a very long time here in the black community. I'm out of District 9, which is a predominantly white community, and we all would like to get along and be in unity. But the things that's been going on in the city of Dallas has been really outrageous. And I said my topic here is discrimination, abuse, and neglect, which has came from the city of Dallas. And I've tried to work with the city of Dallas for years. And a lot of the people in the community have tried to work also. We've had areas that have been targeted in the city of Dallas for lawsuits. Lawsuits in the city of Dallas, and mainly it's been in the black community. I'm just going to speak and tell the truth. And we're one of the business owners that's been in the city of Dallas for years and years, and I've been practicing business for almost 20. My parents, 50-something years, business people. And we've helped a lot of people in the community by setting up rental properties for people that can't afford to buy houses and also don't have the luxury of qualifying for government assistance because they may make too much money but too less money to buy a house and too much money to get on government assistance. But we've been targeted because we're one of the black Jewish owners that own property down in downtown Dallas in District 7 that has been neglected for years and abused. We have. And the citizens, which is right in downtown Dallas, right in the Cedars area. We've owned maybe 10 acres at one time, and now we own close to probably still 8 right now. And what I want to say is the Dallas Morning News 3 or 4 years ago published an article saying that about the nuisance law, how the city of Dallas misused the nuisance law with the senators in Austin. They said that the city of Dallas is misusing the nuisance law by suing businesses and stuff that don't know what's going on. And let me say this here. Let me try to be brief as I possibly can. Okay. We've had a lot of properties that we took. Starting 8 years ago, we started getting sued. And this article also says this was under the old leadership of Mayor Laura Miller, 3 or 4 years ago when she, by her leadership, the city was just in chaos. I'm going to tell the truth here because when you start suing people talking about using the nuisance law, saying code violations, and what it is they send out the SAFE team, which they call it SAFE team, the city of Dallas does. It consists of police officers.
Take about 10 seconds and summarize. 10 seconds.
Okay. It consists of police officers, code enforcement, and fire marshals. We got lawsuit papers here where they went into one of our buildings 50 times with this, and also it says also the city attorney sued
yes,
us.
Appreciate it.
Okay,
so appreciate
can I say one thing?
I appreciate you being with us. I've got to watch the time limits to be fair to everybody else.
Okay, but
thank
can
you.
I just make it sure though? We're going to lose our property because the constables fell within the second week of July because of these false lawsuits here.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Your last speaker this morning is John Radovic.
May I speak with the councilman for the district? May I speak with the set appointment with the mayor?
Absolutely. Make an appointment, and that's what I would suggest.
Okay, because I did earlier, but I hadn't.
And then I think Mr. Harvey, too. But why don't you just visit off on the side with Chief Harvey?
Sure, okay.
Howdy, John Radovich, 800 Jaguar Lane, Fair Park. I just wanted to say thank you to all of y'all for doing the scrap metal ordinance. That's going to be a big plus for us. I've got 25 years in Fair Park, and the problem in the past couple of months, year, has escalated tremendously. I'm very appreciative that y'all have taken the initiative to do things to make things a little better for the business owners, the citizens, etc., so that we can go on with business, that we're not trying to ride herd over 24 hours a day, the problems that go on. But anyhow, my big deal today is to say thank you. I want to thank y'all also for supporting National Train Day in May 10th. Thank y'all.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Mr. Zansky, please.
Mr. Radovich.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for right here. Thank you so much for coming down. I'm sorry you've had problems. You know, colleague, this is only the first. We're not quite through with that ordinance yet. We hope to make it stiffer. You know, I don't know if over the weekend if you read all the email, but there was one disturbing email letter in there of a church that came to turn on their lights Sunday morning or whatever it was and saw they didn't have power. Somebody had gone in there and taken all their main wiring out of the building, and they didn't have any lights. Stealing, taking the wire out of the church. It's we have a terrible problem. And we have to shore this up. What we have passed is just the first stage of something I hope we'll finalize in the next 3 or 4 weeks, is we have to stiffen that ordinance up big time to one of the things, make it very tough for people who are buying this. Also, maybe to triple the fines that we have proposed. But thank you so much for coming down. This is a big problem in the city of Dallas. It's affecting everyone. Thank you so much, Mr. Radovich, for coming down. Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
Dr. C, did you?
Thank you, Mr. Radovich, also for being here. As Mr. Rosensky just said, every time this kind of theft affects many, many people in the city of Dallas, many, many businesses. I want to thank also all the stakeholders who have been very willing to work the solutions to make this ordinance tougher, and hopefully we can apprehend more of those thieves. I also want to thank Chief Harvey and the Dallas Police Department. They had a meeting this week. They're ready to have a second meeting, Mayor, as well, just to be able to come to a solution that we hope will identify better those thieves or suspects. So with that, thank you for your support, and thank you, Mayor. We look forward to have a resolution on the June 25th City Council meeting. Thank you.
Terrific. And I'm glad that, Dr. Garcia, I know your committee has worked very diligently on this. We went, I think, very judiciously and expeditiously to pass the improved tools for our police last week, and I think it's a good example of an important issue that was addressed, and it was addressed in a way of working with the community, especially with the industry and with businesses. Mr. Salazar?
And I think that one of the things that Mr. Rosensky was correct is that we are tightening the ordinance, but also we want to make sure that we have a good example, so when you go out to the other communities and talk to the other mayors on what needs to be done, how we can coordinate our police departments with, for example, Siegelville or Cedar Hill or any of the other suburban cities around the city of Dallas or the Metroplex, we can also exchange information, and that's a very important tool in any type of crime fighting. So so my hat's off to everyone involved and also the industry. You know, sometimes we may not get it right, but we're constantly looking to work with the industry to make the changes required to get it right. So that means, you know, our job is not to put you out of business. Our job is to allow you to do your business, but also to help us catch those criminals who are out there stealing parts from, you know, from churches, from businesses, communities. So that way, that, you know, they're setting a bad example, but your involvement is a good thing, so we can try to get it right. And if we don't get it right one time, we'll come back and we'll get it right. Yep. Thank you.
Good comments, Mr. Dolliver. Thank you very much. Madam Secretary?
The next item is the Council Committee update.
Okay. Let me turn first of all to Ms. Medrano, who heads up our quality of life. Ms. Medrano?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. A couple of things I wanted to mention is on Monday, June the 9th at 7 a.m. On the Lifetime Network, the City of Dallas will be featured. It's their first showing of the Balancing Act. And they came to the city a couple of weeks ago and filmed the city entirely of just how different the new Dallas. And it will be featured at 7 a.m. on Monday, June the 9th on Lifetime. So we are the first city that they're featuring. So I think it's a kudos to our city and, you know, our Convention and Visitors Bureau. They, Philip Jones is going to be interviewed or has been interviewed and will be featured on June the 9th. So hopefully everybody will be tuning in to see the different things that Dallas has to offer for conventions.
So Monday, June 9th.
Monday, June 9th, 7 a.m. Also would like to report in our committee, the Quality of Life Committee, we have taken up, of course, code enforcement. And if the council colleagues recall last July during our retreat, you know, one of our top key focus areas was a clean Dallas, a cleaner Dallas. And so we've taken up things like topics like the illegal dumping team, the Keep Dallas Beautiful program that six neighborhoods will be participating in for the next few years. As I mentioned, code enforcement, we are bringing our compliance officers closer to our, the neighborhoods that they are assigned to. Street lighting, we will have an update on street lighting next Monday, and also the boarding house task force. We will also take that up on Monday. So we are working hard and we are working diligently to have a cleaner, safer Dallas.
Terrific. Mr. Ron, thank you very much. Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, Mayor. The mayor asked me to speak to the council briefly about a trip that our city manager and I had in the last 2.5 days. Mary and I went to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and as guests of the Trinity Trust to review the beautiful downtown redevelopment of Vancouver. And, you know, the last night that we were there, we were all visiting about the conclusions of the trip, and I said, water, water, water. And I'll say it again, water, water, water. In fact, on my notes here it says, water, water, water. The power of water and its impact on an urban community is tremendous. It's just tremendous. Not only for pedestrian-friendly environments, but also for the development of residential and commercial, residential housing and commercial businesses. And this is in the center core city of Vancouver. I could go on and on. Needless to say, we had a very good immersion in a modern-day city that has made the conversion from a city that's focused on transportation and going from here and there via your automobile to a pedestrian environment. And it was clearly a powerful experience. A former planning director for the city of Vancouver by the name of Larry Beasley spent 2.5 days with us. And we brought along several Trinity River Corridor Project type developers. So we had the private sector I represented, and Mary represented the city of Dallas. And it was just a fabulous opportunity for us all to, again, be immersed in a 20th century or 21st century city on water. And the last day we're there, yesterday morning, Mary and I flew back last night. Yesterday morning we were walking down, I can't remember what's the name of the street, but the shipbuilding on it and so forth. And I was talking to Larry Beasley and I said, my gosh, these two-story townhouses are beautiful. And he said, Dave, look up. And I looked up and there was a 30-story building right one step back from these two-story townhouses. And he said, that's the power. You have a pedestrian environment where you have trees, where you have narrow streets, where you have access right to the sidewalk, and then behind that you have a 30-story tower that you don't see because you're immersed in a neighborhood. So clearly we learned a lot. Mary and I and several with the Trinity Trust are going to be retelling about this experience, and Dallas and our development along the Trinity River Corridor have a great potential. What did I start off with? Water, water, water. Thank you, Mayor.
Terrific. Appreciate it. Mr. Carraway, last week you told us a little bit about what you were doing with the kids this last weekend, how it turned out.
Well, you didn't read anything in the paper. Well, that's great. that means that the trip went well. If one kid had had a headache, it would have been something. Let me say that, and I'm reviewing some pitches now that they just sent to me, but Dallas was truly represented on this trip. The kids enjoyed themselves. They got all types of compliments from the people from Moody Gardens. They say normally kids that come in tours, and you come in with 200 kids, they normally destroy Moody Gardens. They were truly complimented. The Space Center, that was just fantastic. We're currently putting together a briefing for the council so that you can see exactly what took place. But we're to be very proud of the kids. They ate. We had 6 charter buses. There were no incidents. We did get back a couple of hours later due to traffic and just, you know, circumstances. But I cannot be as proud of these kids. They learned, they did their homework, they've already started sending thank you cards. This is the intelligence of these kids that they have. So we're going to put together a full briefing. I'm going to ask you, Mayor, to allow us at some point to just do a team summit briefing. Councilwoman Davis was there, and I appreciate Ms. Davis. She was acting like Big Mama, and we had other staff folks who went, Mayor. And they were very appreciative of the city of Dallas. And these cards, I'll pass these around so you can just kind of read them. Of course, they're thanking me and the city of Dallas, but it's what, in their own handwriting, what they feel and learned about the trip.
Terrific. Thanks. We'll go ahead and move to our agenda. The first item is the minutes of May 21st. Those have been distributed in advance. Motion for approval?
So moved.
Mr. Allen moved it. Mr. Rozanski seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. What I'd like to do on the agenda now is where we were going to have the consideration of appointments. Now I think what we'll do is we'll go to the interviews. We'll do those first, and then we'll come back and be in a position to be able to vote those. We have 4 members that are going to be with us today. One, unfortunately, there was a scheduling conflict, a commitment that had been in place for quite a period of time. That individual, Randy Skinner, will be with us on the 18th. So if there's no objection, my intent is to go ahead and have our interviews today. I'm going to give each of the panelists about 2 or 3 minutes just to kind of give an overview, maybe a little bit of background, interest, those sorts of things. Then we'll open it up. I'm going to limit questioning to 1 hour, no more than 1 hour. So that gives each council person somewhere in the area of 3 to 4 minutes. So be conscious of that. I won't go a hard and fast, but I appreciate if you keep it to about 3 or 4 minutes. Then at that point, then we'll go ahead and move on the consideration of appointments, including these. Again, Mr. Skinner will hold that off until the 18th, but we'll go ahead and vote on the four that we have in front of us. After that, then we'll go to the CPR, and then depending on where we stand on timing, then we'll either go into executive session or try to finish up the tax rule and then do it. So with that, Madam Secretary, could I catch you give a quick overview, and then I'll turn it over.
Yes, Mr. Mayor and Council members, these are four of the nominees for appointment to the Ethics Advisory Commission. You know, that is a seven-member full council appointed board. Commissioners Tarpley and Bergstresser have already been appointed. They were appointed back in October of 07. We have two re-nominees sitting with us today. Mr. Waddell is here on the end, and Mr. Blewett is in the center area, who's currently serving as vice chair of the Ethics Advisory Commission, and we have two new nominees to the board. I will allow each one to go down, starting with Mr. Waddell, and introduce themselves. And Mayor, I don't know how you want to proceed at this time to ask questions of Mr. Waddell or just introduce himself.
I think what I'll do is go down and have you each give just a couple of minutes, give a little bit of background, familiarize each of us with you. I would say, first of all, that we just appreciate you being willing to serve. I know some of you, it's a renomination. We appreciate the service that you've already given, and we just appreciate you being able to being willing to step forward and volunteer on something that's very, very important. So why don't I start, Mr. Waddell, with you a couple of minutes, and we'll just go down the line, then I'm going to open it up to the council for questions. Are we on?
My name is Roger Waddell. I've been a resident of Dallas since 1980. I currently am the executive director of the Legal Hospice of Texas, which is a nonprofit law firm assisting low-income individuals who are terminally ill or HIV positive. I work a lot with attorneys, but I'm not an attorney. That's sometimes an advantage in what I do. It's my pleasure to be renominated to the Ethics Commission. It has been a satisfying experience. The 2 years that I have been on the commission, it has been a learning experience as we explore ways of applying and interpreting the ethics code that the City of Dallas currently has on the books. And I appreciate the opportunity to serve the City of Dallas in this capacity.
Thank you very much.
I guess I'm next. My name is Jim Adams. Except for a short hiatus of 3 years, I've lived here since 1981 with my wife, Kathy. We've got two college-age children who were born, one of two was born here and both raised their whole lives here, basically. When Councilman Brown was kind enough to call and ask me if I'd be interested in this, I quickly said yes, didn't I, Jerry, that it was a great honor to be considered for this. I've always thought that things related to ethics and character are very important to the fabric of our society, and kind of look forward to the opportunity to be a little part of what the City of Dallas is about. Professionally, I am a lawyer, but don't practice, so hopefully that makes it better for Roger. Have recently made a career change, and am now, I guess for lack of a better description, in the wealth management, president of a firm called Innisfree Investments. And yes, I'm in the wealth management business, a firm called Innisfree Investments, which is here, an interesting little island in a lake in Ireland. Kind of coming at this with no preconceived notions, I have read the code, but certainly couldn't pass a test on it, Mr. Mayor. But I'm looking forward to the opportunity to learn more about what's going on in the city. And thank you for the opportunity.
Appreciate that. Thank you, Calvin.
Thank you. I'm Calvin Blewett, and I've been with Ethics Commission ever since it started. So I've been around a while. And when I came in, initially I had certain expectations, and most of them have been realized. When we started, we didn't even have an infrastructure to operate on. And over the time, we developed rules and procedures that kind of govern the process. We think that ethics is an important thing in our society today, at least I do, and even before my time on this commission, I did a paper on ethics in college in the 80s because we were trying to get a national health insurance program. I was an employee of the Public Health Service, and it seemed we tried everything but ethics as an approach. Some gentleman from a university, I believe Columbia, made a presentation on ethics. So I was taking a course in health economics, and I did a report on ethics. And ethics is pretty important. It's been around a while. So I've been in Dallas since 1970. We have three children, twin daughters, and a son. They all went through the DISD public school system, and we have one that's a PhD in physics, and another's a registered nurse at Parkland, and my son is here in the city of work. But so that's pretty much my take on it. I think this is an important commission, and as more people understand its function, I think we will get more people involved. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I'm Rudy Rodriguez. I am very honored to be asked to serve on this commission, and I look forward to doing so. I have lived in Dallas my entire professional life since 1991. I am an attorney at the firm of Gruber, Hurst, Johansson & Hale here in Dallas, and have also served on a couple of city boards. I was on the Civil Service Trial Board in the early 90s for a few years, and just finished a stint of about 4 years on the Park Board, which I greatly enjoyed, and had the honor of serving with Councilman Condane on that board for several years. And to me, service to the city has become a very important part of who I am and what I feel I can contribute to my community. My wife, Stacy, and I have two children. A daughter age 12 and a just 12 for a week now, and a son age 8, and we are raising our family in Councilman Rosansky's district, and really enjoy our city and are big cheerleaders for it. On this commission, I look forward to implementing and applying the ethics rules that have been already promulgated by the council, as well as looking at ways to improve their effectiveness, as has been suggested by the mayor and other council members in the last year. So thank you very much, and I look forward to hearing from you.
Terrific. I'll open it up now to questions again. We'll go till about 11 o'clock. That gives us another 50 minutes or so. Mr. Rosansky, would you like to begin?
Yeah. Mr. Mayor, thank you. First of all, I want to thank all of you for coming down here. It's been a long time since I have seen resumes like this, all of you, marvelous resumes, just wonderful. Ms. Watkins, I have a couple of questions for you that would relate to this. Ms. Watkins, how often does the Ethics Commission meet? Good morning again.
Good morning. The Ethics Commission meets periodically when they have a complaint, but they do not have standard meeting dates and times.
Okay. Gentlemen, the only thing that I would love to say, I think our ethics rules and procedures need an overhaul here at the City of Dallas. I would like to see you make a commitment not to wait till we have periodic meetings when somebody files a complaint, but take a look at it. Read our rules and procedures and our ordinance as well as you can, and get together and make suggestions and bring back to us, because I think it needs some changes. Y'all, you four are just superior resumes. We're very, very lucky and happy to have all of you. But please listen to what I'm saying. Please call a meeting together. Start this. and don't wait till we have somebody coming in here with a complaint. And just take a good look at the procedures. The only problem that I'm having with the ethics rules here is someone can file a complaint for that reason, got to call it together, our city attorney has to get together, everyone has to get together, and it just might be a vicious attack on someone, another employee or whatever. I would love to see you look at almost like going to JP court and paying court costs. Letting, if it's not sustained or if it's not upheld or whatever, they should be paying who's filed a complaint. There's something. There's two sides to this. Maybe they should be paying a $150 or $125 fee if it's proved that it's fictitious or whatever. We have it in our court system. I don't think they should put everybody to task here at City Hall, our city attorneys, city secretaries, everybody's task for something that's just frivolous. So take a look at that. I wish you would, but Mr. Mayor, I think we have just four overqualified candidates, and thank you for your time of offering to serve. Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. And I want to thank all my fellow colleagues to come up with four great names like this. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Ms. Newman, I think you wanted to make a comment.
Mr. Mayor, can I make one correction? Mr. Brzezinski asked a question regarding the meeting times of the...
Yeah, I thought it was periodically.
It was periodically for the complaints, Mr. Brzezinski, but in their last term, 05-07, the Ethics Advisory Commission met on the third Friday of every month, and they worked on their rules of procedure. They have a draft set of rules of procedure that they are continuing to work on, but they have completed a portion of those rules of procedure. They did, during that last term period, present a draft ordinance amendment to the council as well.
Yes.
So they have been working this past term year, 07-09, we've been doing the complaints.
Yes.
But prior to that, 05-07, they did meet and pull together.
Thank you, and
procedure.
I saw that draft, and I'd like to have completed whatever you want. Thank you so much.
Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, gentlemen, for your willingness to step up and serve. Earlier, the mayor asked me to speak about the city manager, my trip to Vancouver, British Columbia, and I repeated the phrase, water, water, water. What I would like to emphasize to you all in your service is fairness, fairness, fairness. And that's fair to all involved. That's fair to the person that would come before you with a concern. That's fairness in your interaction between each other. And that's fairness to the person being accused. That is just essential. The very reputation of your panel, of your commission, is based on perceived fairness and how you're treating the accuser and the accused. In the past, we've had issues where sometimes things have come up, I'm not saying specific to your service, but things have come up and the issue was one-sided, and sometimes the accused becomes convicted before all things are heard. So all I ask you in your service to our city and for the council and for our citizens is fairness. So thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kerwin, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And let me echo a couple of my colleagues, Mr. Brzezinski and also Mr. Newman, with the fairness. And then, Mr. Brzezinski, I do agree with you that because of the history of how folks would take advantage of the situation, the cost that it would leave the city to have to bear. And I'm speaking of frivolous filings and personal vendettas and personal attacks and just taking it, you know, to the umpteenth degree. I wholeheartedly agree that we need to do something, and I'll be right on board with you to try to see what type of a fee could be attached to that to just hold it down. If it's something that's legitimate, then of course it would move forward on its own merit. But we have some repeated people that will take advantage of a situation that will do just as Mr. Rozanski had mentioned, and then it coincides with what Mr. Newman is speaking of when we talk about being fair. Looking at you guys, I mean, when you first walked in, I was looking at, all you need was black robes. I was looking at Supreme Court justice. We've talked and bragged on your resume, so, and that's very fair. One thing I would like to say, and I'll say to the open counsel here, that the gentlemen before us, these four with these fantastic resumes, once they conclude their service on the Ethics Commission, we have some very good candidates for other key boards, and we'd like to make sure that we hold your resumes in the hopper, because there may be other services that we now know that we have good people, qualified people before us, and we want your service to continue. But currently now we do want it to stay focused on the ethics. And I can not repeat what Councilman Newman has said. It's just fairness. It may be a tough call, but make the call as long as the call is fair. And you all have been doing that, the two of you that have been on there, you had some tough calls. The others that are coming, you're going to have some tough calls. But as long as you're making a fair call, then fairness wins out. But I totally am impressed. Appreciate you all's service. Commend you. If you know some other folks, we need a stack of good people that we can put all around our city. And coming from you guys, certainly it would be highly recommended if you know of some colleagues and some other folks that would love to give us their service. But we're there for you. Keep it fair. And just look at it from all ends, especially from those folks that have personal vendettas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. O'Shea, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And again, thank you for your willingness to serve the city of Dallas. Sometimes it's hard, and being in the public eye can be sometimes a challenge, but I thank you for your willingness to go through the process. I'm just, you know, recapping some of the past comments. I believe in the years that I have the opportunity to serve the city that the Ethics Commission has been a commission that's continued to evolve, has continued to work in rules and procedures that will be fair for everyone. To this day, I don't think that the Ethics Commission has been unfair to anyone in particular, considering, like Mr. Carway just mentioned, that there have been some cases that definitely has been politically motivated. But with that being said, I would like to hear from the four of you, what are your ideas of what the Ethics Commission has to do in the future to continue to evolve into a commission that continues to be fair?
Maybe Calvin and Roger, you can start based on experience, and then we'll go to Rudy and Jim.
Okay. Well, the Ethics Commission is, I understand it, one of the things we did earlier was we received input from people who worked with developing the code. And we got a feel of what the intent was of the and expectation of the Ethics Commission. And over time, we've tried to do that balance, that fairness thing, and we have consciously operated in a way to be fair to everybody, both the plaintiff and the defendant. We have always done that, and I think we've done it well. There are some things, and the mayor is in some of the news reports has talked with some issues that I think we are to perhaps move expanded to deal with those, and that has to do with some kind of management of money in local political elections. And I think something should, that's something that the Karen Code doesn't deal with, because the Karen Code deals with conflict of interest, economic interest, nepotism, those kinds of things. But the campaign contributions that candidates receive is something that perhaps we need to look at. I know it's controversial, and very few places have done that. We've also surveyed the major cities with ethics commissions and tried to look at what they're doing and pull out some of the things that they were doing, particularly in the, what I call the infrastructure process, to apply to our infrastructure process here. Those are the kinds of things we are concerned with, and we have submitted a couple of recommendations, not in the area of campaign finance. We have not dealt with that, but it's something that perhaps should be looked at. And I think the other thing is, I don't think people fully understand what the Ethics Commission does, and there should be some way to communicate to them really what it does, because some people file claims, and then when the results come out, they are disappointed because they had certain expectations.
Communicate to the complainant.
Correct. And we try to do everything to be fair to both parties in it. In many cases, if you're not a lawyer, a lot of the stuff is pretty is difficult, but I think the staff assists them in filing their complaint, tell them how to file it, and then sometimes we even may, they may cite the wrong citation, we may put in the right citation, because we don't want, we really don't want it to be a vendetta for anyone, but we think if a person has a legitimate complaint, they ought to have a right to present it.
Right.
So that's basically how I see and the hope that I have for the exhibition.
Roger, do you want to help?
I had the opportunity to be in the council briefing when the consultant from, I think it was the Santa Clara University, presented her report and findings. And what I came away from that session from was transparency is a value, not just a goal. And if we as a city value the transparency of government, then the Ethics Commission becomes the arbiter of that transparency. And how do we then equip the commission through ordinances, policies, and procedures to actually sit in that role? So I think that's one of the challenges facing the commission, especially in light of that consultant's report, and depending on how the council moves forward with actual with actions based on those kinds of reports.
Super. And I appreciate you being there. I know she's in the audience, and appreciate you being here very much. That showed a lot of interest. Rudy?
Thank you. You know, obviously as a new member, and I have not been able to attend any of the previous hearings or meetings of the commission or of the council relating to these issues, my first priority will be to learn as much as I can about what the commission's experience has been, and also to welcome input from those on the council who have particular interest in the activities of the commission. Or, you know, in particular, the ethical watchdog nature of the commission, and how it can be improved or modified based on what folks here have seen. I don't have any particular ideas about changes to the current code or to, you know, procedures right now to make it more fair. I see in there an effort to emphasize to those who would bring a complaint that they had better be very sure about it before they do so, because you know that there will be you know, frivolous complaints will not be viewed lightly, and I don't know that there is any need to change that, but I also think that if someone has a legitimate complaint, they shouldn't be necessarily viewed as a as somebody who is doing nothing but stirring the pot, and should be given the respect of presenting their case thoroughly and completely, so that the commission has all the facts available to make its decision.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Jim? Dr. Garcia, the disadvantage to somebody like Rudy and me is we don't have the perspective of having seen what's happened. The advantage, perhaps, we bring is the opportunity to look at it with fresh eyes and sort of a blank sheet of paper to kind of look at what's in place, look at the hard work that's happened before us, and try to just filter that through our own life experiences and see, does this make sense or should we be going in a different direction? I, for one, welcome the opportunity to look at the research, to look at the study from Santa Clara and other things, and, you know, to take the advisory part of our job seriously as well as the rest of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Garcia. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, I want to thank you for serving our great city of Dallas. I really do mean that from the bottom of my heart. One of the things I want to just kind of talk about, I did read when the consultant came down, I have my little card that she gave us, and it's kind of underneath my desk on the mirror side where you can just kind of slide it under, and I keep it with me just to kind of keep me in balance about what my role is as a council member. But we talk about, and I believe that the role of any ethics commission should look at the conflict, making sure that the conflict of interest. And I do believe from the bottom of my heart that I was voted by the people. And people have right to come in to talk about any type of ethics concern that they may have. And I truly believe that. What makes it right or wrong? They have a concern. And I think when we start getting into the side and who can come and who cannot come, I think then we were taking this great city away from the people. And it was founded on the people. So, and by the people. So that's why I'm sitting here, because someone elected me to be in this seat. And so I think we have to continue to look at that. Also, I think we have to continue to look at the fairness. And I agree with Dave. We have to continue to look at the fairness and making sure that we are fair in a process. Fair in a process. And then we talked about, I'm interested to find out, since this is, I think, one of the important commissions, why is there not a lawyer? Do you have a lawyer on hand? Is there a lawyer on hand? Okay. Do the lawyer help you make some of the choices in private session?
We go into executive session whenever mm-hmm. we feel we need legal consultation. We always have three or four of the city attorneys are there okay. to advise us on what we can do legally. And okay. I think the legal advice we get is quite adequate.
Okay. On what you can do and what you cannot do.
Correct.
Okay. The other thing is that you, why do you see that long term you might need to talk about campaign finance? Why did you say that and why did you see that there's a need?
Well, it's a personal thing with me. I think one of the problems we have as a nation today is money and politics. And money influences government in ways that it should not. And when I look at the people who, if you look at the Campaign Finance Act we have right now, it increased hard money from $1,000 to $2,000. How many Americans can give $2,000? And then when you look at PACs and other organizations like that, then you have people with money getting what they want at the expense of people who are working. So I don't say that. I go back to, I'm a political scientist from my background, and so what I've observed is years ago the Supreme Court defined a corporate entity as an individual having the right to sue and be sued. I interpret that an individual and a corporation ought to be equal when it comes to political contribution. Whatever limits is placed on an individual should be placed on other larger organizations like PACs. Well, see, a PAC can give $5,000, and even if I had $2,000, that wouldn't be as potent as $5,000. I know you need money to run a campaign, but I think we lose the intent of a representative democracy
mm-hmm.
when we have a few people giving all the money and making all the decisions.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm concerned about.
And I hope if that is a conversation, I hope that it's not personal. I hope it's not a conversation because you take it personal.
But it's not going to take it personal.
Yeah, but I understand.
If we're going to have a representative democracy, then we all ought to be equal in that democracy.
Yeah, and you know what? And I agree with you. I wish all things were equal. You know, I'm living in South Dallas, and do I feel that I'm getting that district's getting the fair treatment? Sometimes I don't. But once again, I just want to make sure as a commission that we treat the process fair. And as we start talking about new things on the Ethic Commission, that we are continuing to be briefed on those changes as that commission move forward. Other than that, congratulations. I commend you guys for being here and sitting in that seat. Thank you so much.
We got about 25 minutes and still five people. So, Mr. Kinski, please.
Mr. Mayor, I'll be very brief. Gentlemen, welcome aboard, or I guess potentially welcome aboard after we get a motion later in a few moments. A lot has been said about fairness and openness in the process. I guess my only comments would relate to you're in an awkward position. The people that come before you are both accusers and accused. And unfortunately, the accused tend to find themselves in the spotlight even more than the accusers. And much like our legal system, unfortunately, in today's internet, CNN, instantaneous, bloggy world, much can be done to paint a picture of someone's reputation or doings before the actions of your board even take place. And so I would just urge you to try to have some sensitivity in how you deal with those issues. And one thing that has been talked about is that many times people come to the Ethics Commission because they look at it as maybe a cure-all to their political or personal issues that they may be having. And so just a thought came to my mind in a way to maybe deal with that, if there was some sort of a process you could evaluate that would be, I guess, a casual interview with the person who is proposing to make a charge against an accused. Maybe it's the whole board, maybe it's just a panel of the board, to have just a discussion to make sure that where they're heading is within your purview, and that they understand the ramifications of it. And I don't mean this in any way to dissuade anybody from availing themselves of the opportunity, but just to make sure that we don't all find ourselves reading a front page headline about somebody being accused only to find out 3 or 4 days later or weeks later that it was dismissed by the Ethics Commission because it didn't even fit your purview. At that point, damage has been done to the accused. I don't care what the decision is. It's kind of like a retraction of a mistake in the newspaper or online. It's always on page 17B inside near the fold, and the damage has been done when the headline shows up on the front. So I would just urge you to explore that or some other means to make sure that the cases and issues that end up before you are relevant to your charge. And the last is just try to stay focused on your mission and don't be a cure-all for every ill that pervades the city of Dallas and government in general. You have a charge. I'm not saying that you can't expand it, but try to stay focused on what your mission is, and there is a mission, you know, statement to the board, and good luck. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cadena. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just like to thank all of y'all for being willing to serve. I think this is one of the most difficult boards we've got to be on because you've got a lot of big decisions to make, and it does involve people's lives, and you've got to have a lot of wisdom to be there. I know for one, I did work with Rudy, and Rudy's a very sharp man, and I had a great time on the park board with him. The ethics codes that you guys uphold and are making possible for us to move forward, you live also, and that's what's great. I know guys that have been on, and I know for Rudy, myself, you have great character, all of you, and you need to have that to be on that board. And I just wanted to say I appreciate all of you being there. One thing I'd like to ask, and this probably is for guys that have been there, before any cases come to you, they go to another board? Do they go to another group before they get to you, actually?
The
city secretary.
Yeah, the complaint would go to the office of the city secretary. And then it would go to a randomly selected preliminary hearing panel of the commission. Okay. Three members of the commission meet to review the complaint forms, the processes, and any evidence, and to decide whether or not it warrants going forward.
Okay.
If the preliminary panel makes the decision that all of the items are there and that it in fact meets the criteria, then it would go to a full hearing of the commission.
Okay, so a lot of the frivolous insinuations can be stopped before they even move forward.
In my experience, the vast majority of complaints do not make it to a full commission hearing.
Good. That's good. And I thought that was the way it happened. Okay. I'd just like to thank each and every one of you for being there. And I do know Rudy well. I know that young man's very busy. And thank you for serving our city in the capacity you do. Because you've already been, three boards that you've been on?
This will be the third.
This will be the third. But thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cadena. Mr. Collins?
You look over these resumes, and we've got some pretty high-grade ore sitting right there. It's, I, too, want to be one of the first to just thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for your service. As you really look at this, the ethics, and here we are, City of Dallas, 1.3 million people, and then you guys are going to be kind of sitting up there at the top. Kind of keeping eyes on everything and leading us and setting the stage for us. And I like to think that while we're 1.3 million, we're still part of the Metroplex. And so we lead. The city of Dallas leads the Metroplex. We lead the Metroplex, fourth largest Metroplex in the United States of America. So, that's just really a lot of responsibility. But the neat part is your resume shows us already that you're up for the challenge because you've already lived your life in such a way and accomplished things in such a way that I know the leadership will be there. I, too, hear my colleagues, especially when it comes to it's not a perfect world we live in, and when it comes to character, a man's reputation at the end of the day, that's really all we've got. And there's sometimes some folks out there a little bit mean-spirited, and they might bring you know, they know it's not truly an ethics situation, but they'll take advantage of the system, as we talked about. It's nice to know that it will not get to y'all's level sometimes, but at the same time, everybody gets to be heard. I mentioned earlier that every one of you has some high grade or your high grade ore. But allow me to kind of put one man in particular up on the stage for just a second, because he's in my district. And this gentleman truly means a lot to me. I've watched this man, Mr. Adams, and we can see his credentials that he has, and he'll chairman of the YMCA. That tells you something right off the bat. But when you really peel it back, and they're all four of y'all, or y'all the same, when you peel it back, you start going back, Boy Troop, Boy Scouts Troop, Troop Committee and Chairman, Chaplain, Troop 890, one of the largest Boy Scouts troops around, the Chaplain of that. One of the things that I've watched Mr. Adams at the Exchange Club of Lake Highlands, we have a program, Mr. Carraway, called Character Counts. And every month we bring a kid and we put them up on a pedestal and for their outstanding character. Mr. Adams is a man that's given many a speech about character and has motivated these kids. And I can't say enough for that. He didn't list it, but he also instrumental in a program we call, it's out in our district, called Wild for Cats. Like Dallas, we are part of the Robin Hood plan. Money goes from our school district, goes to Austin. We have to raise money. Mr. Adams put together, and he raised, I believe, with raising money and commitments, over $300,000 in 1 year. And anyway, the list goes on and on and on. I just want to say, Mr. Adams, how much I appreciate you and your leadership. I look forward to watching you on this board. And then to the other three gentlemen, thank you so very, very, very much, because this committee, again, is so important. It really sets the tone for the rest of this city and the Metroplex. So thank you for your time. Thank you for your commitment. And thank you for living your life to put you sitting in those chairs. These people have picked you to sit in those chairs, and thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to echo what Mr. Allen just said. Thank you for being willing to serve on this commission. This is a very important commission. I do want to say that I don't have a concern so much about frivolous complaints being brought. My concern is to make sure that you're aggressive, that you evaluate every complaint thoroughly, and to remind you that although we appoint you, you are not beholden to this city council. You are responsible to the citizens of Dallas. You are their voice, and you're here to make sure that our government is transparent and held to the highest ethical standards, because if we lose the trust of our citizens, we lost good government in Dallas. So you are the gatekeepers for that. And thank you for being willing to serve. I want to address Mr. Blewett. Am I saying your name correctly?
Correct.
Mr. Blewett, I could not agree more with your point about campaign finance reform. Everything you said, I utterly agree with. And I hope that we can look at that. I think good campaign finance laws go hand in hand with good ethics in government. And so I hope that you'll follow through on looking at those issues for the city of Dallas and looking at what other cities that have been successful in quality finance reforms, what they have done, and how we may be able to adapt that for Dallas. I fully support you on that. I also hope that we don't do anything to put up barriers for people bringing complaints, ethics complaints. Will we get some false complaints by disgruntled folks? Of course we will. You have that in any situation. But those complaints need to be taken as seriously as the complaints that have a kernel of truth to them and that are serious, because I think we need to make our process simple and open and fair as possible and not do anything to put up barriers that might dissuade people from coming forth with information that they may know that may indicate that any of our city officers, any of our staff, or any of our city officials aren't being held to the highest ethical standard. So please make sure that all the procedures we have in place, and as you review this, as you work on the board, that we're not putting any barriers in there, that we do want to make the process simple and open and as transparent as possible. Again, thank you very much for your service and for doing this. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I've just got one question each, and it probably goes more at Roger and than it does Calvin. It follows on what Dr. Garcia said. But could you be a little bit more specific, as you've kind of, and again, you've seen a number of cases come, that sort of thing, relate, and it may just be thought processes, some of the areas where you think that we can do a better job. In other words, it may be processes, it may be areas, you've talked about the campaign financing, but other areas where you'd kind of be looking at, and I know, Jim and Rudy, you haven't had the perspective, but nevertheless, you've read some of the different materials, and so I'm going to, just a moment, I'm going to go at you too. But more looking at thought processes in the areas that you think, to put us in the lead, where I think that Dallas always should be, what are the sorts of things we should be looking at, and we collectively? Roger?
Well, in terms of processes, we're reviewing those all the time to get at fairness and limiting barriers as much as possible. And it seems to me one of the areas that is also not included currently in the purview of the commission that attaches to conflicts of interest would be in the area of lobbying. And I know there's been conversations about registering and some kind of watchful eye on lobbying. And that might be an area also that would fit within the commission's purview under the conflict of interest area.
Are you comfortable the conflict of interest in general, that we're going at the right thing, or the areas that aren't included that would be issues to you? Or maybe going the other way,
yeah,
too. We, in some ways, we've made it.
I don't think the code is too broad at this point. I don't think there are things there that shouldn't be there. I think the council is appropriate in looking at additional areas for the commission. And that the commissioners...
Examples? Examples of other...
Well, areas? I think the campaign finance that Calvin has talked about, lobbying, that might be an area.
Sure.
Expanding those subcategories of that might be classified as conflicts of interest. I, in my experience, that has been the area that has received the most activity is in the conflicts of interest. I can only think of one issue that involved personal business interest. It really is conflict, whether or not an individual should have been recused from a process and didn't, and continued that involvement.
Okay. Fair enough. Appreciate it. Calvin?
I don't have a great deal to add to what he said. I think that as far as conflict of interest, economic interest, nepotism, I think that's covered fairly adequately.
Okay.
I think these peripheral issues, like not necessarily peripheral, but the campaign finance and the lobbying, that's something probably need to be considered. We also, in some situations, we have the person registering the complaint, and when you look at that person, first the person that they're complaining against, in some cases it's not equal, but the commission has the authority to make them equal. You know, we can give them authority to, if we get to a full hearing, that they can bring folks forward to speak on their behalf or speak themselves on their behalf. So we need to be certain that both people are treated the same way. And for the most part...
In terms of the presentation of their case.
And so I don't recall exactly. One, we have to grant that to them.
Okay.
It isn't given, whereas on the other side it's given to the other person. I think those are the critical issues. And I think the general public need to better understand what we do, what we're trying to do. Because in many respects, I think they see the Ethics Commission as perhaps the conscience of the city. And they need to understand how it works. And again, I'm not so much afraid of the frivolous complaints myself, because the literary panel will pick that up real quick and dismiss it, and it'll be gone. But like you said, the harm is done. If someone can complain against someone, we can dismiss it, and then in some people's mind, the person is still guilty, but I don't know how you deal with that. But that's the realities of it, and that's how I see it.
Fair enough. Jim, Rudy, I guess, Jim, you mentioned a moment ago, the advantage of coming in with fresh eyes. As the two of you are coming in, any areas that you're concerned about, any areas that you've got questions about or kind of thoughts of different approaches?
You know, Mr. Mayor, as I've listened to the comments from various council members about fairness, when you just read the rules of procedure, my initial reaction as a non-trial lawyer, but nevertheless lawyer, was, whoa, this is complicated. But then as you read all the things that the commission has done and the staff has done to make it more accessible to people, I kind of came back to a neutral position. And from my perspective, the process of coming into the system is pretty fair and pretty well balanced. And one of the things I'm particularly kind of anxious to see how the Ethics Advisory Commission's dating fits together is with other areas, with the criminal law and with campaign things that are really regulated by the state, not by the city. There are clear boundaries around what we do, and I don't have a good feeling for what those are, but it'll be interesting to kind of explore how the pieces fit together. And I don't know, for example, if we have any practice about recommending things to other agencies in whose jurisdiction something really falls, if it's outside ours, but I think it's the sort of thing we need to look at.
Fair enough. Rudy?
As I said, there's not much, I haven't had much time to, ponder on these issues, but looking at the memo that you distributed last December with Mayor Pro Tem Garcia, the one issue that's in that memo that I thought might merit a little bit additional review by the commission in particular would be the fourth of your bullets, possibility or the concerns about influence and entitlement and zoning issues, the preliminary proposal that you talked about in there about limiting funds or donations from to a council person within a certain period with it before and after a zoning decision. I thought those were good ideas, and I thought those would, if they're not already part of the ethics code, we should seriously talk about looking at those things. And and the concerns that were expressed in that memo about the role of campaign donations by those with zoning issues before the city, and oversight by the entire council versus individual council members, whether that creates the potential for abuse. Those things I think were well raised, and I think that that's one of the areas that we probably would have the unique role of being able to look at as opposed to crossing over into other arenas, and that perhaps we should look at pretty closely here in the near term.
I hope each of you would view, and again, clearly the primary responsibility is complaints come in to give an honest and fair look at those. But I think all of my colleagues would join me in saying, you bring some interesting perspectives, see things perhaps from different angles. So I hope you would view as part of your responsibilities identifying areas, opportunities where we can just do a better job. It may be in terms of ordinance, it may be process and procedures, it may be just education and communication. But I hope each one of you will kind of, as you go through this, keep your eyes open and feel free to talk to each one of us if you've got suggestions, ideas that may go beyond your board and commission, but we can get involved in it, perhaps set things up differently, that'll make just the trust and respect for the city increase. Very, very quickly, because we've all got around once.
Calvin and I introduced that thing about contribution for and after.
thank you for introducing, for mentioning that, because I was one who introduced that. I can't begin to tell you how many checks that I have sent back because they've had a zoning issue coming up on the agenda. I sent a typical letter, you know, thank you, but I think it's completely out of order for you to send a contribution since you have an item coming up on the agenda. Please take a look at that. You hit it on the nail, too. Take a look at who's, should we limit the funds from one particular company or corporation. But you hit it on the nail, and it's done. Believe me, it's being done. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Ms. Quadrano, and then Madam Secretary, I'm going to go to you, and we'll go ahead with item two on the agenda.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Maybe from the City Secretary's office, if we, I guess all the colleagues, would like to know how many are filed, complaints are filed, and then the percentage that make it to the full board. To the veteran members, there has been research. Has there been any research on what other cities, you know, that are taking up on the Ethics Commission? And then you you mentioned, Stroll, that the lobbying. And, you know, in some cases, it's, you know, only viewed as the council members are, you know, being lobbied. You know, I'd like to see when, and I think I brought it up from the professor at Santa Clara, that, you know, we need to maybe research whether the lobbies are lobbying our staff as well. So I think some of those are, you know, would be a good topic.
Right. The code as it's written applies to staff as well as elected officials. So any additional areas of purview, I think, would go to the entire population that the commission oversees. I think we had 5 complaints last year. And I think only one went to the full commission. I would have to go back and check to be sure, but I think only one went to the full commission. It's not on an annual basis a burdensome number of complaints that come to the commission. Much of our work during the last 2 years was on rules of procedure form in order to make access to the system more understandable with fewer barriers.
Thank you very much. Again, thanks to each and every one of you for serving. We're very fortunate to have you. Appreciate it. With that, you're excused, and I'll turn it over to Madam Secretary for item number 2 on the agenda, please.
Item number 2 on your voting agenda is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions and the evaluation and duties of board and commission members. You do have for your consideration 4 council appointments, also individual appointments, and chair and vice chair appointments. Nominees for full council appointment, nominated by Council Member Hill, is Calvin C. Blewett to the Ethics Advisory Commission. Nominated by Mayor Pro Tem Garcia to the Ethics Advisory Commissions is Rodolfo Rodriguez and Roger Waddell. Nominated by Council Member Allen to the Ethics Advisory Commission is James Adams. For individual consideration, nominated by Mayor Leppert is Raul Marzalino to the Automated Red Light Enforcement Commission. Nominated by Council Member Allen is Catherine M. French to the Youth Commission. You also have for your consideration Raul Magdaleno, nominated by Mayor Leppert for Chair of the Automated Red Light Enforcement Commission. Calvin Blewett, nominated by Councilmember Hill, is Vice Chair to the Ethics Advisory Commission.
Thank you. Do I have a motion, please? Dr. Garcia moved it. Ms. Davis, Ms. Hill seconded it. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? So ordered. Thank you very much. Now, why don't we go on to the CPR, and then hopefully that will take in the area of about 40 minutes. We'll be at about 11:40. We'll have the short briefing that will update us on the preliminary tax rolls. Then I anticipate doing an executive session at lunch. That was okay. I'm hoping right in the area of noon.
Yeah, hoping.
Thank you, Ms. Last words. The tax rule is about 11:40. Tax rule is 11:40. Doctor, you're up.
How's this? Okay. The course that we'll be going to is kind of a groundbreaking course that's been developed by the American Heart Association in conjunction, actually, with some of our researchers here were involved in that development, and we've actually studied it and validated it to be just as good as the standard 3 or 4 hour courses that they have for most individuals. And one of the reasons why you'll see today is that you'll be spending a lot of time actually doing the compressions and not taking turns with other people. By have your own individual mannequins, what I'd love to have you do is to make sure you take this home to your own families and friends and have a multiplier effect. That's what we're doing with the rest of the employees, and you're going to have the same tips that all our other employees are using and taking home today. One of the things I do want to do before we get started is just say that one of the number one causes of death in this country, and by far probably the number one cause of premature death in this country, is sudden death. And sudden death syndrome is not a classic heart attack in which there's a blood clot that blocks blood flow to the heart and has muscle damage, but it actually causes damage to a tributary and it hits the electrical system of the heart. So the heart actually short circuits, and so it twitches randomly like this. So the heart's actually beating, it's still there, but it can't do it in a coordinated fashion. And what happens is, with a defibrillator, it's a special type of electrical shock that comes through and wipes the slate clean, because the pacemaker wants the fire of the heart, but it can't get through all the crazy noise. So by having a defibrillator, it wipes the slate clean and allows the pacemaker of the heart to come and do its thing, and the heart will often start back. I did a study at the airport in Chicago a few years ago, in which we put it out there for the average person to use, and it turned out that in the first year of using these and just having them out there for people to use, we had 9 cases of people who started to use these situations in the first year. Do you know how many of those people survived, would you guess? What would you think? Pass in the airport, people are witnessing it. They go get these things, they're not too far away, just like we have in this building. The 9 people that year, how many people survived? All 9. Okay. And the best part of the whole deal is that it was done in every case by persons. In fact, 6 of the 9 cases, the people had never seen a defibrillator before, had not operated one of these AEDs, and it was able to successfully use these. So I want to do that quick demonstration, if you don't mind, of the defibrillators. 60 to 70% of the cases that will require CPR out in the streets, sudden death, will be due to electrical shock. It's going to be due to a cause that will need electrical shock. Not all cases will the defibrillator work in, but the cases where we're more selected to save people, it is basically going to be necessary to get the heart started again. But you also have to buy time with CPR. But first, I want to make sure everybody knows how to operate an AED, an automated external defibrillator. So, this here represents a... this thing represents kind of a Model T AED effect, and so if you can operate this one, you can operate just about any one that we have out there. So, how many people have ever used an AED before? Has anybody not used one? Okay. 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 You've not seen one or operate one? Okay, then I'll use you as a volunteer if you don't mind. Stay right where you are.
Okay, good. You're ready.
Okay, good. I've got my new portable microphone here. Here we go. So, this is, if I get everybody's attention really quickly.
Cool. I love it.
Yeah. This is the hardest part. Does anybody know how to put a Band-Aid on? Okay. In other words, you peel this thing off just like this. Okay, so you just get to see it. You peel this down just like this. And it actually tells you where to go. This one says to put it over here. Of course, you have to take your shirt off or whatever. It has to be on the skin itself. And this one will show you where it will go up here. So in other words, you'd have the patch and it would go right up here underneath the shoulder blade. That's it. That's the hardest part. Okay, you think you can follow that one, okay? Okay. I'm going to actually sort of put it in my pocket, pretending that we have it on, because I think that young children would probably scream and elderly people would faint if I had to take my shirt off here. So it would not be fun. Okay, thank you. Okay. I got orders up here. So once you go ahead, you've never operated one of these, go ahead and operate it if you don't mind, okay? I don't know. I'll let you know what to do. Is that right? So it's a bypass to take the fair test. Okay, it's for 14%.
There's no
cute
dose of packages.
Analyzing heart rhythm. No shock advised. It is safe to touch the patient. Check airway. Check breathing. Check pulse. If needed, begin CPR.
Now, why didn't this thing advise a shock? This is a real machine. It's not attached to anything, all right? But what I will do now to make sure to show you, see how this thing works in action, I've got a copy of... I have a little machine here that I'm going to stick, a card that I'm going to stick in, a computer card, that's going to be taken from a real patient who needed to be shocked, and the machine will now see that rhythm. So let me start all over again here, okay? And ignore, and just go ahead and do your starting again.
Do not touch the patient.
He has an abnormal rhythm there, right? That's not what he can look like.
Shock advised.
Okay.
Charging. Stay clear of patient. Deliver shock now. Press the orange button now. Shock delivered.
Just joking, by the way.
Do not touch the patient.
And it's turned into a normal rhythm, see? See a normal heartbeat there. See that EKG more.
Analyzing heart rhythm.
We were nailed.
No shock advised. It is safe to touch the patient. Check airway.
So do you think you could do this, that you needed to do it when the time came? It's not a possibility. Councilmember Cook, if you'd indulge me, we're going to get this thing off in the air for a second. How about a hand for her? What a great job. You said there was a couple things you remembered when you had to take action to save a life.
Exactly right. When Dr. Pepe came and talked to us, for those council members that weren't here, Dr. Pepper said, do not forget to take action. No matter what you do, you must take action if you see an emergency situation. And that's the one thing I took away from, you had some great things that you showed us, but that was the most important thing that I took away from the series with Dr. Pepe. If you see somebody that you think is choking, if you see someone that you think is going into cardiac arrest, you've got to take action because nobody else is if you don't take action. So that was my issue.
I'm Paul Pepe, and I approve this message. Okay, thank you very much. And that's really part of this. So I want to leave that message. You can do this. It's pretty straightforward. And you have never had any instruction. You haven't seen one. And there you go. Does everybody else here in this room feel confident that they can do it? It's basically recognize the emergency, put the defibrillator on, and just follow the instructions. It's easy to do that. Open the box. And in our studies, what we found was by doing a demonstration like I just did for you, not only did people use it in their testing immediately later, 97% of the time correctly, but 6 months later, 93% of the people were operating the AED perfectly well. And they all told us that, we just remembered you said, it's easy. It was not threatening. Just follow the instructions. These are pretty much the most fail-safe thing we have in medical.
Doctor, yes. What does the device usually run, and can you get it at a drugstore?
Well, you know,
approximately.
There's some various types, and they're in the ballpark of anywhere between $1,000 and $2,500. Patricia, how much are they going for now? Is that about right? Yeah, so, and usually, though, you have to get it through a prescription of some sort. So physicians have to do it. There has to be an accountable physician who's responsible for these things, all right? Now, does anybody know where the defibrillators are here? How far is the closest one? Okay, we have a list right there. There, you write that down. It's right around the corner if we need one, for example, right outside the store. Usually they're by the red elevators, the blue elevators, with some exceptions here, which are on the list. But you should be able to access one. You should know where it is. If you know how to use it now, you could be the one that saves a life. Last time we did this training was May 2nd last year, and of course we had a turnover of council, but of the seven remaining people, two of them, Pauline and Linda Coop and Pauline Madrano, have saved a life since that period of time. Yes? Did you have a fire? Yes. Okay, that's a great question, okay? Because, first of all, permanent brain damage can occur within 3 to 4, 5 minutes of the time a person suddenly stops breathing or collapses and has that kind of condition. In my case, I only have about 3 minutes left because I've had shoulder. I have lots of permanent brain damage already. But the point is that there's just no way a professional rescuer can get you in the 4 or 5 minutes in which permanent brain damage could occur. So it's up to us to save our loved ones. 70 to 80% of the cases that require CPR occur in and around the home. Another 15 or 20% occur in the workplace. So it's going to be something you know or love that you're going to save. But still, if the time frame, if you can get to somebody within 1 or 2 minutes, their chances of coming back neurologically intact and being, you know, going back to work and paying taxes again are basically going to be done. Yeah, right. And buying things for sales tax and whatever. No. Basically, if you have no duty to act per se, that's not a problem. But one of the things I will tell you is that there are good Samaritan laws for using this. If you volunteer to go do this, you are absolutely protected by state law, not only in terms of doing CPR, but using the AED. Great questions. Thank you. Yeah, generally by the red elevators and the blue elevators. There's a list that we have here, as Mary has, and we can get it out to you if you like.
Will you give that to all the council members? Yeah. If you get a copy.
So remember, if it ever happens that the horse you run through the other side.
Okay, so I think that's the main thing. The best thing you need to know is the AED is part of CPR today. It's so easy to use, as you can see. Any of you can now use it. You've been trained, actually, as far as I'm concerned, because it is that easy to use. But the next thing is, despite that, you still need to know the basics of CPR. Not everybody needs a shot. Children, for example, will need to have just basic CPR techniques done. In fact, in a drowning study I did of children in one decade, 10 years, I looked at it, and it turned out that the survival rate for children who got CPR by a bystander, no matter how long they were down, 75% of them came back neurologically intact if they had bystander CPR. Despite a good response time, if no one did CPR before the paramedics arrived, this sort of answers your question, there was no neurological outcome. They resuscitated 5, none of the kids went home neurologically intact. It shows that the definitive action was basic CPR. And as some of you know here in this room, one of the definitive actions also, long before anybody can get there to you, is to help them with choking. And I'll just mention choking very quickly. One of the things about choking is, just think about it, it's an obstruction here in this airway, and what happens, it's like a cork there. And so what I just basically tell everybody is pop the cork, okay? So you know the techniques and the tips that you're getting to go through it. I'm not going to go through that today. Essentially getting behind someone and just underneath their ribcage and just popping the cork out. If you have to, it's basically the action that you're taking. Think, let's get that thing squeezed out. by giving that kind of a technique. If you want to learn more about what to do for children specifically, any of those things, just get on the tape that we're going to give you in your individual boxes. I'm going to ask you please to go home and train other people and be a model citizen for everybody else. And I'm hoping that this is really going to take off. Not only are we going to be training all the city employees this year, with what you're getting today, but I've already had contact with both the DISD and other corporations. For example, Texas Instruments is now planning to join forces with us and train all their employees, and we've been because of our example here. Okay? So we're on our way, so thank you very much. Let's do the course. What I'm going to prepare you for is that we're going to play, there'll be a little bit of introduction. There will be, you'll have to take out your kits. In fact, if you don't mind, why don't you go ahead and take your kits out now while I talk a few minutes more and start blowing up your individual mannequins. Okay? And what we'll be doing is as you get your mannequin out and blow it up really well, what I want you to do is prepare to actually be doing some of this compressions and the three mouth to mouth resuscitation will take you through. It'll take us about 17 minutes, that's all, to get through this videotape. And then when we finish, I'll have a couple last comments. But essentially, I think this whole session will take probably less than a half an hour, which is really incredible, because in the past, it used to take 3 or 4 hours because people would take turns. Now we're doing it one-on-one. If you need any help, I'll be glad. Hey, Ray, are you here? If you don't mind, you can come help us out if anybody needs you.
And revive it. Just revive it.
Excuse me.
They screen me coming in for any weapons, so you're here. Oh, you didn't get a box? Do we have a box for customer stuff, though? Hey, Chief, do you want to come? Yeah, right. Do you need some help for you? Okay, good.
My seventh time.
Seventh. That's fine. I want to make sure we're helping you.
So please tell me my license requirements.
I don't think, do they have, you have a particular record? Yeah.
I just did it like in your weekend, but
yeah.
I'm wondering, I
didn't start
talking
to you. Well, I just need to know who your agency is. I can find out if it is, but I can signify that you've learned. Okay, I can write a letter. Okay. As we're doing, I just want to say, this whole issue has been a terrific partnership here within the department. Chief Burns and his group are making sure that we have AEDs throughout both city facilities, so that will actually increase that life-saving effect. Dr. Ray Fowler here is our head of our emergency operations for the Vive Health System, of the EMS system for the area, as one of the probably most award-winning EMS physicians in the nation, and a terrific head of work. And, of course, Patricia Mejia, who's head of the major gifts for the American Heart Association, who's partnered with us to help get these kits that you're having right now. We're glad to have her on board. Everybody got their blow-up dolls here done? Okay. I want you to know that today is actually the 50th anniversary of the first Resuscitate Annie doll. The history of that is kind of interesting because there were some drowning cases, and a man named Cora Lairdahl, who was a doll maker who was working with New Polyvinyls, was approached by the Scandinavian Anesthesiology Society and asked to see if he could make a lifelike, a first human simulator in a sense. And that was 50 years ago, and they've actually pioneered with the Lairdahl Corporation taking these kits as well. So it's appropriate that we're on the golden anniversary learning this. All right? I don't know if you saw, but today, our session today is actually sort of heralded in USA Today. We've got an article on your desk showing that we had basically been acknowledged that. All right?
Sure.
All right, so let's go ahead. Everybody looks like they have their mannequins going, so I'm going to play a video.
Did my stretching exercise in this place, and then I started on my 3-mile jog there in the park, my favorite jogging trail. I was taking a shortcut to the park, late for lunch date. There were no warning signs at all, nothing. When I saw saw this man kneeling over Ellen screaming for help. So I went to the guy and told him to get busy and call 911. And she still wasn't breathing. So I started CPR right away. The 911 dispatcher told us to keep it going until paramedics arrived. I woke up 2 days later in the hospital. That's the next thing I remember. He was there really late for lunch. You know, I feel pretty lucky I was able to help. If it had been for Charlotte here and her performing CPR on me, I would be here right now. I'm very lucky.
Hello, I'm Beth Wilson. CPR is short for cardiopulmonary resuscitation. It's no wonder people call it CPR. Those are big words, but they describe a very simple action that can pump blood to a person's heart and brain when the heart has stopped beating. A life is saved, and you're a hero. So what else did you do today, right? Just all in a day's work. Hey, I'm not making fun of a serious and important subject. I'm afraid of it. CPR is not as hard as you might have thought, and it's something everyone can and should learn. In this video, I'll show you each step of CPR a little at a time. Then you'll practice it along with me. Trust me, you'll catch on quickly. It's pretty simple. If you have a remote control for your video player, keep it near you so you can easily pause or replay anything you missed. In your CPR learning kit, you'll find a couple of things. Let's get them out and see what we have. First, there's the Mini-Ann. The Mini-Ann is a training mannequin designed to help you learn the basics of CPR. You'll also find a family and friends booklet that you can refer to if you have any questions after the video is over. Do you have the Mini-Ann out? Good. Let me show you how to get it ready. Take the tube of your Mini-Ann, this tube right here. Did you find it? Okay, and blow it up like this. And try to inflate Mini-Ann so that it feels firm. When you can't blow any more air into Mini-Ann, pinch the tube here to keep the air in while you plug the end of the tube like this. If you need some more time to get, just pause the video now. Okay, now your Mini-Ann is ready. So let's jump in and practice. And don't worry about making mistakes. Our goal is to give you plenty of practice doing CPR. And as we go along, I'll give you some tips to help you fine-tune your skills. First, place Mini-Ann in front of you, like this. Her chest should be at your knees with her head to one side. Now, let's try the easiest part first, which is pushing on the chest. Watch me to see where your hands should go. Imagine a line right between the nipples. Put the heel of your hand on that line in the middle of the chest. Now, lock your fingers, like this. Lean over the chest with your arms straight down. Okay, now you do it. Put the heel of one hand in the middle of the chest, right between the nipples along that imaginary line. Then put the other hand over the first and interlock your fingers. And now with your arms straight, push down and then let the chest rise back up all the way. Like this. Got it? Okay, do it with me. Follow along with the beat of the music, and let's go. Be sure to let the chest rise all of the way back up between pushing down. Are you pushing straight down? Don't worry about making mistakes, because this is just practice. Doing all right? Make sure that heel of your hand is right in the middle of the chest between the nipples. You're doing great. If you need to rest, stop the video and start.
start again when you're ready. We're almost there. All right. Good job. You did great. Well, are you all warmed up now? Good. You've just done the most important part of CPR, pumping blood through the body. Now, let's warm up some more with another part of CPR, breathing. That is, breathing for the other person. Watch me for a moment while I show you where to put your hand. Ease the head back with one hand on the forehead while lifting the chin with the fingers of your other hand. Okay, now you try that. One hand on the forehead, the fingers of the other under the chin. Be careful not to put your hand or arm on her neck, otherwise air won't go in and out. Have you got that? Good. Now let me show you how to get air into the Minianne. Watch me again for a moment. Use the hand on the forehead to pinch the nose, not yours, and then completely cover Minianne's mouth with your own like this. Now blow into Minianne. Breathe the air in for about 1 second and make the chest rise. The air is going to the right place if you see the chest rise. Okay, now try that with me. One hand on the forehead, the fingers of your other hand under the chin, keeping your hand away from her neck. Pinch the nose, cover Minianne's mouth with yours, and blow in for about 1 second.
Well,
did you see the chest rise on your Minianne? If you didn't, pause the video and keep working on that. If you need to see that again, back up the video to review what I just showed you. Okay, now let's try a few pairs of breaths to make sure that you've got it.
Doctor. Doctor, do we do this instead of this or both?
Both. He'll need a second. We're going to need a second.
Okay.
We're trying to do this.
Okay.